Greetings and welcome to the Wednesday Rewind from Believers City Church, Menominee, Wisconsin. Each week we gather here to revisit our previous Sunday message, moving away from that simple monologue of a Sunday church service and into a dialogue of a multi-church community dynamic. The Christian living, out in the real world with other believers. I'm Pastor Tim. I'm the senior preaching pastor here at Believers City Church. And if you're local, you're likely tuned to 101.7 FM, street level radio. And if you're further away today, you are no doubt with us via the internet, maybe even regional TV. But however you got here, we're glad you did. Our previous Sunday, we were in James chapter 5, verses 1 through 8. In the message entitled, Heaping Up Treasure. Let's get into it.
And verse 1 says, Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be a witness against you, and you will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasure in the last days. Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. You have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. Now, the problem we have with this text right out of the gate is that so often we can fail to receive it. It can fail to find its target. Because in reality, none of us feel rich. I think we reject that luxury viewpoint, and we feel we deserve them. Hey, we work hard. I deserve these things. Or maybe we even might lie to ourselves and say they're necessary for our survival. But God calls us to do that. So I'm speaking generically to the church abroad, church all, the greater church. And we think we can't do that. We can't invest in the kingdom because we can't afford it. That certainly applies with tithe. It certainly applies with missions. Yet we read in Scripture, we read in the Gospels how there was the widow who gave her small coins to God. And how that small little amount was really more greater than many of us give, many that even rich people give, because I think a lot of people would give out of their large amounts. But see, she gave and did without even necessities, while others, I think, we give our leftovers. How often we see people saving their money for the proverbial rainy day. And in the end, it benefits no one. And what it does is it has a negative effect in the sense that it takes that individual and it causes the possessor to trust in that wealth. And ultimately, you follow from A to B to C that trusting in that wealth causes us to trust in ourselves, because we're the possessor of it. See, we're the king of it. We're the controller of it. So ultimately, I trust me. At that moment, the only thing that's going to matter, as they say, is what we sent ahead. That which we have invested in God's kingdom. All of this is to be heard not just by the individual, but by corporately as a church. We in the local church need to wrap our minds around this idea today. I am astonished continually. I'm astonished at how much churches will spend on their buildings. We choose, and if you're a guest, you need to know this. Instead of all those bells and whistles, we choose to invest in missions, number one, and we invest in staff. Buildings don't lead people to Jesus, but people can lead people to Jesus. So I'm going to invest in staff. That's where it's happened. That's what's going on. And outreach, always, always out. Verse 5 tells us, You have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. Ouch. You need to understand that you are leaving here with what you came with. Nothing. Nothing. I don't mean you have to leave some stuff. I mean, you have to leave it all.
Throughout this letter, the author, James, continually wades into the deep end of the pool on subject after subject, always with an appearance of what strikes us anyway as a rather brazen attitude. I mean, I will agree indeed, he wasn't going out of his way to play nice. He was seemingly determined to broach some subjects that others probably, and many have since, went out of their way to steer clear of. This past week, James effectively called out an entire cultural generation by throwing down on what is the accumulation of wealth and possession. Especially convicting towards those who consider themselves to be reborn children of the King. His handling of the issue is really anything but gentle. I mean, he just kind of rolls a grenade into the room, doesn't he? It's almost as if he's willing to take on the whole world here, because this subject matter, you see, is not merely a pagan embraced ideal. It's as much of an issue really within the greater church as it is in the world. Now, this is one of the most modern, Christianity revisions, if you will, that have been made to acquiesce to what is a Gumby generation of Christian light believers. Many of these little tweaks that have been applied to Christianity have been made to the scriptural version of discipled faith. Things like sexual promiscuity, church attendance, church body life, lying, slander, hating brothers and sisters, prayer, devotional practice. Really, these are just a few of these issues, and sadly, these rewrites, if you will, have become so entrenched in the greater church today that we now have what is a generation of young believers that have no idea that their thinking about Christianity is not only not normative as a Christian, but it, in fact, these things are simply sin, flat out. Well, truth be told, I think we could use a guy like James right about now. A man that's willing to burn down the house if necessary to clarify what God's will is on matters like this, and to draw a clear distinction between what is God's will and what is simply my will. Now, James, this week, he begins by calling out the rich. And look, no matter how much we would like to stand off to one side on this when, you know, we want to believe that this doesn't really apply to us, we need to fess up, gang, and acknowledge that if we're living in America, James is calling us out. Our measurement of who is rich begins with a guy, generally speaking, that is just slightly richer than we personally are and moves right on up to the Bezos, Musks, and Gates. Rarely can we expect clarity or any kind of acquiesce on this matter from the world at large. But gang, again, why are the Christians so often just as guilty of clinging white-knuckled to their money and possessions? How can that be when that just flies corporately and overwhelmingly into the face of what we know to be biblical Christianity? How can we be a people group that, at least in theory, is looking towards eternity that we are supposedly holding loosely the things of this temporal world and then still manifesting our faith in this way. So instead of taking notes and moving to meet that bar, such poignant directives instead tend to make us bristle, which of course is simply and effectively a smoking gun as to our personal guilt on this matter. I mean, we pull out our grace placards and we start marching for what we perceive as our religious freedom and our rejection of legalism. But listen, gang, before you light your Molotov cocktails here, let me point out that James and, yes, Christ himself, they're not demonizing money. Money and possessions is not the problem, but rather our attitude concerning these things. So, it's not where's my bank account, it's where's my heart. God is not saying give me all your money. God is saying give me all your love. It's the misdirected love, it's the dependence, the priority, the focus on these other things that's the problem. What happens is our chase of these things, it becomes the get out of jail free answer, wherein we quickly claim we are, well, simply unable to attend church on a regular basis. We're unable to serve. We're unable to fellowship because, well, we have to work. Now, let's acknowledge that the world of employment, admittedly, is anything but neat and clean. Certainly, there are issues of paying your dues, at least early in a person's career. And sometimes, you know, there's the crisis needs of your employer. I mean, let's be real. So I'm not trying to oversimplify something that is, frankly, anything but simple. But our work, our money earning, our possessions, our worldly toys must not stand between us and the commune that we are to have with our Creator. It is something, or if something, is standing in the way of that commune, one needs to be actively moving to get out from underneath it. Not next week, not next month, but tomorrow if possible. And no one is saying that doing such a thing is going to be pain-free. Seldom is the moves on this level in our lives, seldom are they pain-free. But when love is at stake, real genuine love, a person will crawl across crushed glass to get to the object of their affection. Jesus once said in the Gospels, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. However, we treat those words like a flowery poem. It sounds nice, right? It sounds nice to our ears, but there's no real action, there's no real movement in response to that. And that's what Jesus was looking for, a response. However, his words do serve as a bright interrogation light, illuminating truth for ourselves, as well as, even though we don't want to acknowledge it, as well as providing the truth about ourselves to the people out there in our sphere of living. Indeed, to those that are redeemed, but yes, even those that are not, I mean, the world's watching, gang. They're not blind. They're watching many of us essentially live just like them. Same priorities, same consumptions, same possessions. Thus, they most often think they are just like you because they are just like you. Look, most of us today feel self-justified in our embrace of money and things, at least at the level that we live. We work hard, after all. We take the position that we deserve these things. We might even attempt to go so far as to, you know, put a spiritual spin on our personal situation. We use religious terms like steward and prosper and blessing. And of course, we solely travel the high spiritual roads of grace and freedom. But it all only gets that kind of spin in the issue of Christianity. I mean, that kind of reasoning, it's never going to fly in a marital relationship. It's never going to fly or in a parenting relationship. It's never going to play out in a confessed practical life passion. Oh, I love you so much, dear. But you know, I'm just so busy, I can't really come home and spend very much time with you. And I really love you, but I have to work and make a lot of money. Or, you know what? My great passion in life is, man, I love competition bicycling. It's awesome. So you bike a lot? Well, no. I don't bike at all because, you know, I work a lot. Look, in the Gospels, we have a record of Jesus throwing down with equal passion as James did on this matter. He says in Matthew 25 that those who failed to righteously act upon what they had been given, what they had been given in trust, they were to be, and here it is, quote, cast into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth, end quote. Wow. God had entrusted them with money. God had entrusted them with the power that went with it. And instead of investing what God had given them for the kingdom to lead to the lost, to lead the lost to Christ, to bless others, what'd they do? Well, at least this one guy, he buried it. And James seems, speaking actually about that very guy, says, you have been condemned, you have murdered the just. And man, that is some serious language. No reprieve, no excuses are considered. Christian, it is critical that you consistently and faithfully practice a lifestyle that says, not just with words, but with your lifestyle, says, I'm not staying here. Your life needs to say, tomorrow, next week, or a year from now, I'm going home. And furthermore, there's nothing to pack for this trip because I'm leaving all of it. I'm leaving all of it right here.